Sunday evening to everybody. This is your host, Fish Chuck, on a bit of a rainy, cold evening here on the space coast of Central Florida. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend Rob, a bad Batcast of War.
Hey, how are you? Same thing over here. The rain's kind of let up, but the temperature dropped about 20 degrees, man. I had to put on sweatpants and a long sleeve shirt, man.
Yeah. Well, it looks like it's going to get down into the 40s this week, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. go straight to the phone lines. I got a local number, 321. 321-549. Anybody? Okay, you're back on mute. So tonight we're going to talk about a couple different things. We're going to talk about Tackle Webs, which is an innovative product that just came out recently. Super excited about it. Let's see. And we've got some other things going on. We've got the Orlando Kayak Fishing Club, for those of you that are listening in the Central Florida area, is having their holiday gathering Tuesday, December the 6th at Mosquito Creek Outdoors. That's right, Birdie, at Mosquito Creek Outdoors. The guest speaker will be Captain Rodney Smith, who is quite the character. If you guys have never heard of Captain Rodney Smith, he is the brains behind the Coastal Angler magazines that are probably on your coast or in your area. A free publication that you can pick up at most of your tackle shops. But Rodney's written a bunch of books, one of them being the Enjoying Life on the Indian River Lagoon Coast by Captain Rodney Smith, which is a great book. Dinner's going to be provided by Mosquito Creek Outdoors. Paul Faircloth, the owner, has graciously donated the dinner. So you got an RSVP. You can go to their website, OrlandoKayakFishingClub.com, and for more information. So that's that little, get that out of the way there. Let's see. In the upcoming weeks, I'm going to be talking with the owner of a pretty new product, the original Eyes and Tubes for you fly tires that listen to the show. It's a pretty cool product. Check it out. It's eyes-n-tubes.com. Makes tying eyes onto the shank of a hook much easier. It's a pretty cool deal. It's like in a tube, and you slip it over the barb of the hook, but you can check it out on their website. Other than that, let's get into it. I got Mr. Becker on the phone.
Good evening.
How are you, sir?
Doing well, thank you. Coming down off the trip to Fan High.
Yeah, I'm still on the trip to Fan High. I'm on like the 7-day high. I keep eating open-faced turkey sandwiches, so can't go wrong with that. But
the turkey a la king tonight was pretty good. So,
well, there you go. Have you been fishing, sir?
I have. Finally got out this Saturday for a little while with my friend and the Lord of all he surveys, Bill Haywood Howard, out on Tampa Bay.
And did you do good?
Of course. Yeah, we had a good time. The winds were blowing a little bit. We actually had a trip planned down to a little further south Florida, down by the Fort Myers area. But the winds down there were blowing 20, gusting 30, and we decided that discretion being the better part of valor, we'd stay a little bit closer to home and fish in Tampa Bay. Both picked up a few redfish, a couple trout, and had a good time paddling around.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, can't wait to get back out on the water, man. I've got some good reports of fishing in here on the Space Coast. Lots and lots of black drum and some not-so-secretive areas that kayakers tend to frequent. Lots of them and good-sized ones, too, tailing all over the place. Redfish are on the move. The water clarity is kind of cleaned up a little bit up in the last couple of days with all the wind we've had. But again, these low 40s and mid 40s we're going to be experiencing the next couple of mornings should help to clean that up real good. And all is well in the world of fishing. However, I am without kayaks at the moment for the first time in a while. I don't have a single kayak in my garage, so I'm kind of stressed. Okay, I'm kind of stressing out about it, so yeah, whatever. But it would appear that my Jackson Cudas are finished. They are made. They are done. They're ready to be shipped, and hopefully I should see them in maybe 2 or 3 days. So that was the latest email I've received from Jackson, so I'm excited about that. Oh, yeah, one more thing, guys. If you can, just help me out. Go to the Jackson Kayak Fishing page, like it, and then on the page there's an intro video to the new Cuda, so you can check it out and see what all the buzz is about. It's a pretty cool little video that the guys put together. So, but
can we comment on that?
You sure can.
Because I had the chance to look at that today, and I'll tell you, it looks like quite the boat. It looks like they've put a lot of thought into all the different things that that somebody might want in that type of setup. And the only way you do that is by sitting your butt in the boat and having other fishermen sit their butts in the boat and say, I want this, I want that. They couldn't come out with a product like that without listening to people who want to use it. So hats off to them both for the video and for showing that they're putting the time in to find out what people want and then building it. That's a good deal.
Yeah, I try to be easy on the Jackson Cuda, Jackson Kayak drop on the show. I don't want it to be all about that all the time. But I'll tell you, since I've become part of their family, it's been pretty impressive, man. The fact that there was a couple of things that had came up in conversation on our Facebook page and issues with the Cuda before production was done or the first run of production was done. One of them being the scupper plugs were riveted to the inside of the boat, which was, you know, a bit of a concern for some of us fly fishermen especially. And we all voiced our opinions, and this is just the fishing team. We voiced our opinions, and it's done. It's no longer going to be done. They're not going to be riveting the scupper plugs into the boat. Now, that's pretty impressive for a manufacturer to it basically within 6 hours, 8 hours, make a decision like that and just cut it from the line. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, you're right, man. That boat was basically developed by the fishing team, the guys that have fished the Cusas for so long, and everything that those guys put out is top-notch. So I'm so excited about getting them. I can't wait to see them. But anyhow, one other thing I wanted to bring up real quick before we get into the sight casting stuff. For those of you that are fly fishermen, you may have heard the name before, April Vogie, who is a guide up in British Columbia. She is a nonstop environmentalist who tries to take care of what they have up there, that basically untouched resource of British Columbia, and try and conserve it. They put together a fundraiser called Flies for Fins. And basically what it is if you're a fly tire or if you've just got extra gear laying around or whatever you're not using, you can donate it to this charity. And the way it works is all the proceeds that are raised from the sale of those items go directly into the British Columbia, I guess it's for the fundraising assistance to help with all of the conservation of fisheries in the NBC. So it's a pretty cool organization, it seems. I haven't had time to read up on it too much. I just saw the big blast on it today on Facebook. But for more information on that, it's Flies for Fins fundraiser. You can find it on Facebook, so check it out. But anyway, okay, so temperatures are dropping. I'm excited. I know Rob does a different kind of sight fishing than we do over here. We're going to get into that a little bit. We got in the chat room, I've got Captain Mike Ortego, I got D, I've got Ms. Lozier, a bunch of folks. So we'll get to you guys here in a second, too. Temperatures dropping, fish are starting to slow down a little bit and get into those transitional periods that I keep talking about, where they're going to stop eating so much fin fish and start focusing more on the crustaceans and all the little snails and stuff that crawl across the bottom of all the intercoastals, which is the time of year to sight fish. The water gets clean, the water's nice and cold, the fish are again starting to slow down, and all their main focus is on what's crawling through the grass and what's crawling across the bottom, so the tails are sticking out of the water. If you haven't ever gone out and sight fished for redfish, it's probably, to me, one of the most exciting things to do. Exciting forms of fishing for me on the intercoastal here up in the Mosquito Lagoon. There's nothing like a crisp, cold, early morning sunrise, and you look across the flat and all you see is tail sticking out of the water to get your heart racing. So, a couple things that we're going to go over, things to use while you're out there, tackle techniques, tips, lures, that kind of thing. But, Rob, we kind of had a brief discussion about how you sight fish. You want to kind of dive into that real quick?
Yeah, sure. I know you guys and Dee and everybody, you all stand up all the time and you're looking and, that's cool and everything. That's a good way to do it. But I have a little bit of a different theory on it. And I think that even though you can see the fish from further away, they might be able to see you a little bit too. So I like to stay down in my kayak and let the wind kind of blow me across the flat. And not just this time of year, but usually any time of year if I'm fishing on flats, except for Saturday. God, I was like boogieing across the flats, man. I had to use a drift anchor. So, but anyway, what you do is I just kind of let the wind push me across, and it's super quiet. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've snuck up on fish that way and seen them, within a rod's length of the boat, before they see me. And I just typically just kind of cast in front of me searching, any sort of, like right now, let's see, Saturday I was using a white DOA curly tail and I switched over, that wasn't doing anything. And I knew I was on fish because I kept seeing some decent fish as I was moving along. I switched over to the root beer shad tail, DOA cal shad, and they seem to prefer that. So that's usually my tactic. I can do that with a topwater or anything like that. But the idea is just keep a low profile and cast out in front of you, as you're searching. And once you find the fish, you just quietly set your anchor and you're all set.
Yeah. Easy enough. I got another caller on the line, 321-662.
Hey, Chuck, what's up, buddy? It's John Melzer.
Hey, what's going on, bud?
Actually, I was just calling to listen in because I couldn't get you on my iPad.
Oh, no problem, no problem. You want to join the conversation or you want to just kind of hang on mute?
No, I'll just hang on mute, bro.
All right, buddy. Well, that's easy enough, Rob. A couple of things I like to look for when I sight fish is obviously areas that should hold fish, and by that I mean areas of grass flats that have intermittent sand holes. Those are areas of ambush points where big trout and redfish will like to lay in to get warm too on a crisp morning. I like the wintertime also because you don't necessarily have to get out of bed at dark 30, roll down there at ugly 30, as some people like to call it, and jump on the water before the sun's up. You can kind of take your time and roll out around 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning and still have a pretty productive tailing fish bite. So, but what I like to also look for is always try to keep my eyes pinned to the bottom when I'm paddling. I want to see if I recognize any of the creatures that are crawling across the bottom, the crabs, the baby horseshoe crabs, if you see any shrimp flicking across the surface, that kind of thing. You always got to find an area that's bait in it. One of my favorite spots to fish is pretty accessible by boats as well, and it's just because all year round it holds fish. That's down in the south end of the Mosquito Lagoon. It's no big secret. It's just either shoreline, the east or the west shoreline, will hold fish all year consistently, but especially in the wintertime, the far reaches that are way back up close to the bank, are like the honey holes. I'll find redfish or I'll see redfish cruising those banks first thing in the morning, sometimes with their eyes halfway out of the water, just their backs completely exposed, and they're just cruising around looking for small blue crabs or small fiddler crabs, shrimp, that kind of thing. But presentation to me in the winter and while sight fishing is always key. I always try to fish super, super slow, as light a presentation as I can make. So instead of throwing that quarter-ounce jig head that you're used to throwing to get the distance, going down to, say, even a 16th-ounce jig head, a small little 4-inch paddle tail bait usually is deadly for just about anything that's going to be on the flat, with the exception of sometimes the black drum. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. You know, I understand what Rob's saying about standing up versus sitting down. I know when I sit down, I'm lower to the water. I can usually pick up the subtlety of just the tip of a redfish tail kind of pop out of the water real quick and go back down, where if I'm standing, I might would miss that. But I feel that I get an advantage from having that little bit of extra sight to spot a fish from a good ways out. But Mr. Becker, how do you search for fish when you're trying to sight fish?
Well, if we're talking about my newly found love for saltwater fishing down here in Florida, I've just barely been doing that a year. I have not yet had the opportunity to fish standing up. For those of you who had the opportunity to laugh hysterically at the video Haywood put together and posted on yakangler.com of me standing up for the first time in my boat after having mounted a set of outriggers. On the boat, that's the purpose of that. I want to stand up and fly fish and pull the flats, but that boat is just too unstable, which means it's really fast, but it's not a standable boat without them. So that's one of the things I'm looking forward to. So my sight fishing now has been from on my butt in the seat, and there you're looking for shadows, obviously looking for things that don't belong. Obviously anything moving is what we used to call a clue. But I'm also looking a lot at the water, and frankly, looking more at what the water's doing and what the water's not doing than I am necessarily for fish, especially in the shallow spots of the flats, looking for head wakes, looking for nervous water, looking for things that just don't look in place with the rest of what the water's doing. Might be a wind line, might be a quick flash. The last several times I've been out fishing, the biggest redfish I've caught each time, and the biggest trout the last time I was out, came from just seeing something that didn't look right, seeing a quick flash there, throwing out, and pulling something fairly decent out of what didn't look right. I'll also tell you that when I first got down here a year ago, I didn't see any of that stuff. It took a while to acclimate myself to what the flats look like and what the water looks like and the difference between wind on top and the bait on the bottom, underneath the surface rather.
Right.
And to just kind of start noticing when things don't look right. But I'm basically spending my time looking for something different. That's what I do.
Yeah. That's a really good tip, actually. One of the things I like to do, too, when the bite kind of slows down up on the flats is move to transitional areas. And for me, that sometimes they're hard to find where we're fishing because it's so shallow. But what I like to call boat ditches or boat canals, which are basically just the prop scars that run up and down all of the intercoastals over here, tend to hold a lot of fish in the wintertime, believe it or not. And just because it's a few inches deeper than the rest of the grass around it, and it's all sandy bottom, so it's going to hold that warmth a little bit better than I would say the grass would, and it also acts as a ambush point, which is pretty good, definitely a good sign of things to look for. Fishing around the islands out there in the lagoon or in the river on the relief sides, the sandbar sides, is also a good trick too, later on in the morning after the water's gone ahead and warmed up and everything. But as I was saying, stealth is really important. The water is so super clean, man. It's I don't know. I think that these fish are on high alert all summer long in dirty water. And when they have the option to be able to see you in the wintertime when the water cleans up, man, if you're not stealthy, you're done for, especially with the big trout. But I'll get back into that in just a second. Let me go back to the phones. I think I have Captain Mike Ortego on the line.
Hey.
What's going on, bud?
Hello. Hey, man. How's it going, buddy?
It's going good, man. It's going good. For those of you that don't know, Captain Mike Ortego is part of the Fishing Florida radio show that airs Saturday mornings from 6 to 9 on 740 The Game. You hear me talk about it quite a bit. It is one of my favorite radio shows to tune into. And
You're
all
crazy.
The shenanigans that take place and all the banter, and God, it's awesome. But
you are crazy. You are crazy.
Yeah, I am.
To enjoy it.
Yeah, the also the inventor of tackle webs, I believe.
Yes, sir.
Well, why don't you tell everybody about tackle webs? I'm super excited about the fact that you kind of get a little bit towards kayakers now as well.
Yeah, tackle webs, how it came about, you know, being a professional guide and a fisherman here, born and raised in Florida, and grew up around fishing, Keys and in Miami area, South Florida, and then later on moving up here to the Space Coast and fishing tournaments and stuff, and just guiding and just spending a lot of time on the water on, flat skiffs and smaller boats. And, it's just it came out of a necessity for space, for storage. And, I wanted something that was easily accessible, something that we could, you can wet down, something that's going to, that's durable, and something that was going to fit in a space and keep things out of my way, out of my feet, and keep it, my deck clear and keep it safe. And that's one day, we came up with tackle webs, and the suspending storage system that sits in framework, it suspends, and now in kayaks, we've had a lot of kayakers using them on, the back of seats on sit-on tops and just in the on the top of the kayaks themselves, and it's been great, man.
Yeah, I'm going to try and get over to Mosquito Creek in the next couple of days. I want to check out the one that you've got on the back of the Jackson boat over there on the back of the seat. I know I've got them in the shop.
Yeah, man.
I know what they look like, but just to see it mounted to a kayak would be pretty cool.
Yeah, we've got some pictures on Facebook, man, of people that have sent in or ones we've taken of, some pictures on kayaks, and the smaller bags seem to fit better on kayaks. We've got a 12x16, and we've got a 16x12. One's basically vertical and horizontal, and it's made to fit, a perfect utility box or tackle box where you can hold your lures and stuff like that, or put in your waterproof otter box or whatever you want, and it's made to keep it right there, keep it simple, and keep it easy to get to.
Yeah, it's definitely a great product, man. And I know I see a lot more boats leaving out of the port with them strapped to the side of their T-tops. I saw a boat the other day I could have sworn was covered from one side of the T-top to the other in the things. And it's a great idea, man. I mean, being a big boat owner myself, that's the major problem is finding a place to put everything. I can't tell you how many times I've caught a tackle box or an egg weight or whatever to the gut that was sitting up on the dashboard as trying to run to the next location. So it's a great, great tool, especially for us kayakers too, get your stuff up off the deck and keep your stuff dry. So kudos to you, man. That the website's tacklewebs.com.
Yeah, tacklewebs.com, man. And right now for Cyber Monday, we're running 20% off any order. So anybody wants to check it out and wants to get an order in before midnight tonight, I think the discount goes on until midnight tonight. So I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. Anytime. And I know, obviously, being a captain yourself, you go out and you do a lot of fishing in lagoon and stuff like that, sight fishing, wintertime. You're probably a lot like me. It's probably one of your favorite times to fish. What's your go-to tactics and tips, if you can give any out, to finding some fish in the wintertime?
As the winter gets, as it gets colder and the evenings get colder, I know you mentioned it earlier, a later start's definitely a plus. That sun warms up the flats, so fish come out of that deeper, warmer water and start moving up and start grazing. You also mentioned shellfish, and they're moving away from that, mullet type fish or, finfish bait, and their forage is going into, crustaceans, shrimp, crabs, little snails, worms, and stuff like that. And really, what I love to do is look for broken open bottom, you know, potholes, a lot of flats and potholes, a lot of sand bottom and dark spots mixed together, and really downsizing my baits, downsizing my soft plastic, downsizing my flies, and really just downsizing my leader and taking it, you know, taking the presentation very slow. As it gets real cold, and you really get these colder months here in Florida in January, February, those fish will sit in those potholes, and I've seen them, and they'll sit there for, you know, I've had a bait. I remember last year I threw a chunk mullet into a pothole on whale's tail, and there had to be 7 breadfish just sitting in there trying to get warm. And I let it sit there, and I think my client had it in there for about 5 minutes, and finally one decided to take it and put it in his mouth and swallow it down. So, you know, I mean, it's slowing down that presentation and downsizing, man, I think is the key to the winter fishery, man.
Yeah, and I'm super excited about this year, man. It's the first year that I'm really going to attack it really, really heavily with the fly rod, and I'm looking forward to some really, really good success with that, man. I've been tying like a freaking madman the last couple of weeks, all kinds of small shrimp patterns, rattle shrimp, crab patterns, just crazy stuff, just to see if I could get a couple more on fly this winter. But well, heck, man, I appreciate
you coming. Let's do it, man. Let's go out together, man, because I want to increase my fly game too, and I'm looking for some more personal days on the water. So, with some friends, man, and getting to feel that tug a little bit myself this year. So, let's get out there, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll have to get your butt in the kayak sometime. I know that that'll be a little bit alien to you, but you know, it's a lot of fun, man.
I used to kayak, man. I had one of these super long saltwater types sit on tops, man, way back in the day. We weren't all born with boats, man, and, you know, wading and kayaking, that was all canoeing to kayaking, that was all part of the transition and fishing and that hunger to get out and be adventurous and get across to the next, you know, creek or get across to the next bay, you know, that was always the thing. And we'd find anything that could float as kids and into college, man. I started fishing up here in kayak at a Curse Park and Banana River, man, and, you know, I love it, man. I like to get back into it, you know. So maybe I'll meet you over there at the creek, man, and we'll water test some, and you can get me one of those sweet Jackson kayaks, man.
Yeah, man, you know it. And I look forward to. And I know you guys are planning on doing some seminars later on in the year, maybe the end of December, beginning of January. Just keep me up to date on that kind of thing. I know we were talking about it on your show.
Yeah.
Once I get that information, I'll let everybody know. We're the guys from Fishing Florida Radio planning on putting together some back to basics type seminars that are going to be held over at Mosquito Creek Outdoors in Apopka, and they've actually invited me to kind of join in with them in a couple of kayak seminars. So I'll let you guys know as soon as I find out. So yeah, it'll be good, man. It'll be a lot of fun.
For sure.
Well, cool, Mike. Man, I appreciate you. Yeah, man, I appreciate you calling. You feel free to hang on the line, man. We've got another 30 minutes or so, and, you know, just...
Yeah, man, I'm enjoying listening, man, now that I'm getting figured out how to log in and everything.
Yeah, it's...
I'm in, man. I'm hooked.
It's kind of crazy. You got to give up your firstborn and your blood type and a couple other things to get in here, but once you're in, then it's easy. But, well, one of the other species I want to talk about real quick, since it is the wintertime, is flounder. Last year I caught more flounder in the Mosquito Lagoon than I had ever caught, fishing all the years I had out there. And, that's definitely a fish that you can target when the water temperature drops. It's one of those fish that doesn't care how cold it gets. They really actually enjoy that cold water. It's one of those, strange phenomenons, I guess you can call it. As a kid, we used to go down to Sebastian Inlet and fish Sebastian right after the Thanksgiving cool down, as we would call it. It's usually the first cold front right after Thanksgiving. Everybody would rush down to Sebastian and start flounder fishing, looking for big giant doormats. Well, this year I want to fish the lagoon for some fish, and the areas I'm going to look for are going to be the transitional period, the transitional areas between, say, the Clinker Islands that are north of Hall River Canal. South of Hall River Canal, it's there's some little drop-offs and releases and stuff that you can kind of target. There's a lot of sandbars out there, a lot of kind of, I guess you call it like a transitional grass to sand kind of area. It's real weird. You have to get out there, check it out yourself. It's super thick grass. I don't know exactly what kind it is, but it goes from that to nothing, like bare sand for miles. Well, this flounder will tuck right up against the edge of that grass and just lay there all day long and not move. And the same bait you're throwing a redfish, throw for these big flounder, the either DOA Cal paddle tails or Bass Assassin paddle tails, Marsh Works, any of the small paddle tail type baits run real slow across the bottom. Those flounder will come up and crush them. But that's definitely one of the one of those target species that I love to go after. Rob, do you target flounder in the wintertime on your coast?
Yeah, but usually it's a bycatch. I don't really know a whole lot of areas around here besides like Sankey Pass and Hurricane Pass and stuff that are really good for flounder fishing. But usually, when I'm fishing mangroves and stuff, like last weekend at Whedon Island, it was like Flounder City. I mean, they were coming out of the mangroves chasing stuff down. You know, I don't usually target them, specifically. Usually it's just a bycatch.
Now, see, over here, and this is going to go along with the sight fishing thing. I haven't gotten off of that track. Over here, you can almost sight fish the things. In Port Canaveral, for example, for any of you guys that might be familiar with Port Canaveral, the cruise ship terminals has their own parking, a big giant parking garage. Right behind that parking garage is a big old sandy beach. And I guess it probably averages about a foot, foot and a half of water up close to the beach. It drops down all the way down to about 20 foot once you come off the little shelf there. But in a kayak, you can get right up on the beach and kind of cruise it nice and slow. And I'll do it this time of year standing up, and you can see them laying on top of the sand. They don't always bury themselves. And I've actually sight fished for flounder that way on that beach by using jigs or using shrimp on a jig head or whatever, where, oh, there's one, drop it down in front of his face and kind of bounce it a couple times, and they'll clobber it. So you can kind of see it all take place. It's really cool. But in the lagoon, you might have a little bit of a harder time to sight fish for them if you're not in the right areas, going back to the transitional, spots where you're going from grass to sand or right up underneath mangroves and stuff. I've watched them before, as Rob was saying, shoot out from underneath the mangroves and clobber a bait. You can see them coming up off the bottom. It's the craziest thing. Looks like the bottom's moving. It's a lot of fun. One of the things I try to do before I launch is pick a spot that I know holds bait, but more importantly has other creatures on it, like catfish and pufferfish and those kinds of things. In the wintertime, those are my best friends. If I don't see a catfish or a pufferfish or even stingrays, I usually will pack up and move somewhere completely different, because if they're not there, the redfish won't be there. The black drum won't be there, because if they're not there, there's no bait there. And as Mike was saying, slow things down and definitely downsize. For me, downsizing is not a big deal, because I usually don't throw plugs or anything much bigger than the 4-inch or 5-inch size anyway. So a 4-inch paddle tail to me is the most universal bait that I can throw all year round and catch fish. And color preference, I think, is more about the angler than it really is about the fish deciding that, okay, today I want to eat, for lack of a better term, electric chicken, right? It's pretty much comes down to me to what's left in my bag by the end of the day. Because on a good bite over here on the East Coast, you should be able to run through a couple packs of plastics on a good bite. And, by the end of the day, you're scrambling to try and find something that looks like anything they might would eat, and they'll still eat it sometimes. But remember, too, when you're fishing for these tailing fish, this is probably the most important thing. If you see a redfish on tail or a whole school of redfish up on tail, remember that their strike zone is only about the size of a dinner plate, because they're looking straight down at the bottom. They're not looking up. They're not looking around them. They're looking straight down at the bottom when their tails are in the air. So if your bait passes them by a foot and a half, 2 foot out in front of them, chances are they're not going to know it's even there. And you're just going to watch them sit there and keep tailing. Or the vibration sent off by your bait might would even spook them, because they're so kind of leery, because they're not really paying attention for safety purposes. They're not really like looking around and checking out what's going on around them. So a lot of times the subtle things will freak them out. But yeah, just try and get that bait right on their nose, and don't cast at their nose. Cast past their head, probably 10-15 yards. If you can get it further than that, it's not a big deal. And this will give you some time to kind of guide the line across right about where you think his face should be, and kind of bounce that plug or that lure or whatever across his nose, and they'll pick it up. Unless you're a dead bait fisherman or a live bait fisherman, if you're throwing shrimp, put it anywhere near them, and they'll find it while they're tailing. They'll smell it, and they'll, you know, find it out. But when I'm throwing those plastics, that's pretty much the way that I do it. I don't rig them on a jig head too much in the wintertime. I'm usually rigging them on a 3-0, maybe even a 4-0, depending upon the size and thickness of the bait, weedless hook. So, you know, that on some 12 to 15 pound fluorocarbon and 10 to 15 pound braid is all I use, so I can get a really, really long cast. To me, that's more important. Do you have a, Greg Becker, do you have a lure combination or anything that you found in your short time fishing down here that has worked better for you in the wintertime?
Well, I think it's, for me, it's been one of those, you know, the lure you use most is the one you catch the most fish on, and the one becomes your confidence bait. Had real good success fishing an Exude Gold Dart. You can rig it a ton of different ways. You can, fish it a ton of different ways depending on how you rig it. I've rigged it with a jig head to get it down. I've rigged it with a keel-weighted hook if I was looking for it to swim rather than bounce along the bottom and look like it was, you know, eating and feeding on the bottom or pretending to be a shrimp. I've rigged it on a bare worm hook just to make it run flat and almost to use it and run it right below the surface if the fish were hitting bait fish that were moving around, and I could make it act more like a bait fish, more like a fluke or the other freshwater lures. You can dead stick it. I haven't wacky rigged it yet, but I'm sure that's coming this year. That's been a real go-to bait. You can fish it under a lot of different conditions and fish it a lot of different ways, so I've been real happy with that.
Yeah, that dart's awesome. I love the dart, especially when the water's high. That's a great bait to throw and skip. Man, that dart skips like nothing I've ever seen.
Exactly.
To skip up underneath mangroves and stuff. In fact, I got a buddy of mine that just got back from down around Everglade City, which will transition nicely into our next topic, which will be the boondoggle. But he just got back from there, and in 3 days he caught 65 snook, I think.
Nice.
Most of them were smaller snook, but 65 snook nonetheless. So that's pretty awesome, man. And every one of those fish were caught on a dart, except for, I think, three or four of them that he got on fly. But so darts are the answer. And it's exactly what he was doing. He was down there. The water, the tide would come in. He'd skip them up underneath the mangrove trees, and as fast as he could go, he's catching snook. So it is a great lure. And I've used the darts quite a bit over here. Exude also makes, and I've talked about it a bunch of times on here, I've talked about it a few times on yakangler.com. The Exude crab is, God, man, if you're going to throw a soft plastic crab, to me, that thing is the answer. I've had a lot of success with that bait, and not doing a whole lot to it. I mean, that's a great bait, just like a paddle tail or a shad tail, that you could put on a rig for a kid and just have them cast it out and just reel it in nice and slow. Because it's all you have to do. Crabs don't jig up and down and twitch back and forth and do all kinds of weird stuff the bait fish will do when they're wounded. They just kind of like go one direction, and that's about it. Every now and again they'll change direction, but for the most part it's just like a steady, slow presentation. What I will do to those crabs, though, is I'll get a scent. Doesn't matter what manufacturer scent. I don't personally have a preference, but I've used them all, and they've all been good. BioEdge, Procure, the Gulp Scent. What's the other one? There's another one that's pretty popular. The I can't remember it now. Bunker Sauce. But I'll drop some of that in the bag, Ziploc the bag shut, put the Ziploc bag into another Ziploc bag to make sure it doesn't leak, and leave it in my truck for a couple of days prior to going fishing. And I feel that it being in the warm truck, the plastic gets a little bit soft and tends to soak up a whole lot of that scent and hold that scent real long. And, man, you find some tail and reds and you put one of them crabs out past them and reel it, just like I say, nice and slow past their face. Don't try and get it to them real quick. Just nice and slow, bring it past them and watch that tail. That tail drops 9 times out of 10, you're hooked up, man. They crush that thing. In fact, a lot of times, I almost lose the hook because the fish gets it so far back in his crushers. I'm trying to, you know, thinking that it's really a crab. So I think I got Ms. D on the phone. Ms. D, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, D.
Sorry
How
for
are
the
you?
Interruption.
I'm
good.
No
problem. How's everybody?
No problem. We're all good. Tell me, have you been fishing?
Yeah, the days that I'm able to get out there have been fantastic.
Oh, awesome. Have you started to see any difference in their patterns because of the cooler water, or has it still kind of stayed the same down there?
I've actually transitioned from fishing the Sebastian Inlet area over up more by where you're at, up in the Titusville area. So, and the reason being that over here, the water is really, really cloudy and dirty. It's actually cleaner by you.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's like no grass. There are some areas that do have grass, but you're very limited in finding any fish there because the transitions of what we're having right now in terms of what the fish are doing is winter fish are now exiting out through the inlet. Big redfish, snook, flounder are all in the inlet right now. You can't really find many of them on the outsides, so I usually head up more north by you. And
have
I've
been
really successful, yeah.
Have you been fishing those black drum?
In the inlet, no. You're going to get those not in a kayak, but usually if you're just standing on shore and fishing off rocks or on the corners of the jetties.
Yeah, no, I meant up by me.
Oh, by you? No,
yeah.
I haven't yet. I've been targeting what clients want, which is usually redfish and trout right now. So.
Right.
I want to get the drum.
Well, call me after the show's over. I'll tell you a super secret location on them right now.
Okie dokie.
But so what are your tips and techniques you can throw out there real quick about finding fish in the wintertime, sight fishing? Because I know you love to do it too.
I had an opportunity to listen to a couple people's comments. Rob said something about sitting down, not being able to stand up, and I understand that because a lot of the people I fish with and you have as well are not able to see tailing fish and whatnot, so they're blind casting and whatnot, or trying to find the anomalies in the water to understand, which to me is really an excellent way to learn what's going on around you differently than being able to actually stand and see those tails. It's not always that we're standing and we see the tails. We see those things happening around us. We're sitting down. I can't tell you how many times I'm sitting in the kayak, or standing, I should say, in the kayak, not seeing anything. And the second I sit down, I do actually see those tails. It's all in the angle. So you have kind of the best of both worlds, being able to stand in a kayak and sit in the kayak. And we all would love to be able to learn all those signs and signals to know where a tailing red is, a tailing black drum is. What's the difference between a tail of a red versus a tail of a drum versus a tail of a trout, for that matter.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could see it at a different angle and go, hey, that's a black drum. And, no, wait, it's actually a sheep's head, you know.
Yeah.
You don't know that unless you're out there a lot and you're experiencing it and you're paying close attention to it. Those of us that really want to soak that in will soak that in. And that's the only way to learn that kind of stuff. So I'm glad I can stand in my kayak, but I know a million people that can't and wish they could. So all you can do is... almost want to say, like, if you're blind, your other senses work better.
Right.
You know, so work on those senses if you can't get up and stand and see and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
So that's my first, I know it was long and winded and whatnot, but I just don't want to knock people down that they can't stand up in a kayak. There's other ways to be able to catch these tailing fish. Practice, you know, get precision, perfect dropping, perfect casting is very important, whether you're sitting or standing. So practice. But that's really about it. I mean, there's
yeah.
redfish tailing everywhere, whether it's summer or whether it's winter. So I don't know what else I can add.
Yeah. You know what, I noticed that, especially up here by me, in the wintertime, there's definitely seems to be more tailing fish in the winter than what you see in the summertime for the most part because, again, there's just not the bait fish to be had. The water's cold. The fish aren't that aggressive. You know, they're kind of lazy in the wintertime. But I've been fooled on more than one occasion by a sheephead tailing as opposed to a black drum or a trout tailing as opposed to a redfish. And it's just like, man, but even being able to pick up the little subtleties on the surface, you know, again, looking at the whole picture, paddling down a flat, looking out in front of you and then saying, oh, did you see that? And the guy next to you like, no, I didn't see anything. Picking up, say, just a little ripple that shouldn't be there. You know, you've got a completely glassed out situation and all of a sudden you have a little tiny ripple. Well, it could be nothing more than just a tail sweep of a fish just sitting in a hole. Sometimes it even takes just that, seeing that to be able to target these fish. You'll spook more fish than you'll catch. I can guarantee you that, especially if you haven't had a lot of time and success at throwing at tailing fish. You're gonna blow up more tailing fish than you're ever gonna the first couple trips. It's just the way it is. I do it all the time. Throw at a fish that I see tailing past him, but not knowing that there's another fish on the other side of him, spook that fish. That fish spooks the fish I was trying to catch. And then you got, you know, then the chase is on pretty much. You follow until he settles down. But, you know, as long as you slow down, you don't try and be in a big hurry. Forget about trying to work lures that require being moved quickly through the water. To me, that's kind of a no-brainer for me in the winter. Because, I know what they're feeding on. I've cleaned enough redfish in the wintertime to know that their bellies are not full of mullet and they're not full of pinfish. They're full of little small fiddler crabs, baby horseshoe crabs. I've pulled dead baby seahorses out of their bellies before. So, I mean, they're definitely lazy fish. As most of us like to call them, they're basically glorified spot-tail catfish. So, I mean, they'll eat just about anything. But, yeah, just, you know, find yourself a nice, peaceful place where you're not getting run over. And just take your time. Learn the water and learn, you know, your area around you and where you're fishing. And it'll come. It's exciting when it happens, though. I don't know.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. In the winter, lighter weighted bait is better. No weights, no nothing, maybe a 16th inch weight, you know, that kind of a thing. Lighter colors, slowly, you know, approach your prey, and just everything is slow. You know, that water's cold, and just stealth.
Yeah. You know, and it's just a great time. It's a great time to be out because, man, when the water is clean like it can be, I haven't been on the water in a little bit, but when the water gets as clean as it will get in the lagoon, it is the most beautiful thing you'll ever see in your entire life as far as inshore fishing. It's almost like fishing down in the Keys. The water's that clean. And to look out over a flat and watch the water turn in the middle of the afternoon, watch the water turn from just, you know, clean, you can see the bottom, to bronze from the big school of 100 fish swimming at you. It's pretty bone chilling, man. I mean, my hairs are standing up in my arms right now. I'm just talking about it, but it's really, really cool. It's a lot of fun. And man, it's so easy. Once you find them, it's so easy to stay with them and catch them and not necessarily beat up on a school of fish, but just as we did that one day, but you know, just, stay with them and have a good productive day. You know, there's so many other target species to fish for during that time, but, yeah, slow is all you, I mean, that's the word of the winter time is slow. But I got about 8 minutes left. Rob, are you planning on fishing at all this week?
I'm not sure. I might have to go to Orlando this weekend, and so I'm not positive. But I'll let you know.
What do you got coming up for your show tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern?
I'm not sure yet. I'm sure I'll put something together. Check out the email bag and all that stuff. Probably talk about fish and potholes and stuff like that. Somebody sent me an email the other day, you know, what's a pothole and how do you fish it?
Yeah. No, that's a good question. A lot of folks, I mean, if you're not on the water all the time and you don't know the lingo, a pothole doesn't sound like nothing to you. It was a hole here. What is it, you know? So, yeah, that's
cool.
Well,
over here, it's weird. It's not like there. Over here, it's different. It's like, for instance, like Saturday, the water was pretty murky in some of the area that we were fishing, and it was, you know, maybe 2 feet deep, and there's grass, and, you know, the way that you can tell when you're in a kayak, you know, it's like, or boat or whatever, is, you know, it's kind of brownish, greenish color. And then the potholes show up like little blonde streaks, I guess you could say, you know, blonde spots. And what I would do, you know, basically I'm looking for big trout in those potholes. You know, this time of year is great for big trout to feed the water, you know, potholes. And what I would do is kind of cast past the pothole and swim it back to the pothole and then just let it drop in. And 9 times out of 10, you know, it's going to get just destroyed. And it was. It was getting hammered by needlefish and lizardfish and stuff like that. But where I did find, we found bigger trout on deeper holes. It was like you went over that 2-foot edge and then we were in, like 4 feet of water with grass, and that's where we were picking up fish. It was kind of weird. The fish were still deep the other day. So that's a pothole, man. Look for the blonde spots on the brown grass.
There you go.
And cast past it and swim it to the hole and let it drop. You know, usually this time of year, like a white or a, you know, like a DOA curly tail or something. And most of the time when I do fish curly tails, I do use the 1/16 ounce jig heads.
Right.
The Wahoo jig heads. Love them.
Right.
Man. Because it just, you know, it kind of slows it down a little bit. It's not just like diving for the bottom. You know, stuff like that. I do use the, it's kind of like a Exude Gold Dart, but it's like a it's a mirror lure version of it. It's called a Little John. It's a little bit wider. And but, man, I don't usually use it in the wintertime or when it's cold, when you have to fish stuff slower, because it's more of an erratic. For me, it's more of an erratic bait. And I still have Exude Gold, Exude Crabs that you gave me, man. Those things are awesome.
Yeah.
You put that on a weighted worm hook, and those things are flipping. Those things are great, man.
Yep. Well, I just lost Mr. Becker. Hope you have a good evening, sir. And if you go fishing, tight lines to you. Trey over in the chat room has posted up that he's got the Coastal Georgia Kayak Fishing, Savannah, Georgia, free basic kayak fishing seminar December the 10th. from noon to 2 p.m. for any of you guys up there around Savannah, which, man, I love that place, at the Coffee Bluff Marina. So there you go. If you guys are in the Savannah, Georgia area, stop by on December the 10th, noon to 2, and have yourself a free seminar. Awesome. I'm hoping to go fishing at some point this week. I am dying to get my my kayaks. I'm hoping to come in this week, and I'm going to make the fish pay it for not being able to put hooks in their faces the last couple of weeks. I've got some super secret locations that I got to go beat up on real quick before I spread the word, but that'll come next next week. I'll fill everybody in on my super secret spots. But right now I got to go and do as much filming and picture taking as I can of what's going on out there. But I know Trey's with me. He said me too. I think he's in the same boat as me. We're waiting on getting our Jacksons. But so hopefully that'll be this week, man. I'm super excited about it. It's been a little while coming, and man, the anticipation's killing me. I'm worse than a kid waiting for Christmas right now. But check out the Boondoggle, February. Forgive me, I don't have the dates in front of me again. I'm a slacker.
17th through the 20th.
Thank you, Rob. 17th through the 20th of February, Boondoggle down in Chokoloskee, Florida. Miss D. Kaminsky's going to be there. Rob,
gonna
bad
try.
Podcast. Yeah, she'll try to be there. Rob's going to be there.
D-squared.
Yeah, D-squared might even be there. It'd be crazy. I'm gonna try to get down there as well. I really want to fish that area and fish with a bunch of you folks that have all already signed up for the thing. And I'm gonna be sleeping in Rob's tent. We might be cuddling.
No, I'm in a camper, dude.
Oh yeah.
Swanee Refugee has a sweet camper. So, but you're more, you know. Hey, I got two sleeping bags that can zip together, dude. That's
cool. All right.
So broke back out. Whoa, easy. So anyways, so that's the next goings ons. I talked to Rob prior to the show and saw what he put up in the chat room. A lot of people are pushing for us to go to Louisiana on our next Boondoggle. I am all about it. I like the idea of going to Louisiana. The redfish in Louisiana are stupid. They'll eat just about anything, and I like those kind of fish. So, cool. Keep your eyes peeled. Check out yakangler.com. It is your ultimate kayak fishing resource for all things kayak fishing related. Adam and Mark have a really good thing going on there. My Facebook page, just get a hold of me. If we're not friends, let's be friends. D, if somebody wants to hire you to take them out, how do they go about doing that?
You can fill out the form on my website, realkayakfishing.com. You can email me at d@realkayakfishing.com. That's D-E-E. Or you can call me 324-684-6874. 394-6874. Which is on my website as well. So
check out Cap Mike Michael Ortego's tacklewebs.com. Appreciate you coming on tonight, buddy. Appreciate everybody in the chat rooms. I got about 30 seconds left. Everybody, please be safe this week with the cold weathers and stuff. Make sure you've got your heaters on in your house. Nobody needs to be dying of hypothermia in Florida. That would just look weird on your tombstone. So give me a shout if I could do anything for you. Chuck it. Was it Chuck's Kayak Adventures at hotmail.com? Chuck's Kayak Adventures.com is on the website. But tight lines to everybody, and hopefully the winds die down. And again, thank you as always for being here. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Chuck.
See ya.
Redfish Chuck. Good night, everybody.